Hooray! I want to welcome everybody to the Florida Building Commission's Hurricane Research Advisory Committee meeting of March 23rd. Please be aware of background noises. They get amplified. Keep your device on mute. If you are on a phone, please don't put it on hold, and then wait until requested by facilitator to at appropriate times to speak. I'll stack names and everybody have a chance to speak. With that, let's ensure that we have a quorum. Let's see. Chairman Schock, are you here, sir?
Here.
Very good. Sergio Escunce?
I'm here.
Very good. Joe Belcher?
Here.
Commissioner Compton?
Here.
Ann Cope? All right. Commissioner Gross?
I'm here, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff, hope you're doing well.
Thanks.
Mark Michelson?
I'm here, Jeff, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Craig Perino?
Good afternoon, I'm here.
Very good. John Plisich?
Good afternoon, here.
Very good. Mike Savage?
Yes, sir, I'm here, thank you.
Very good. Commissioner Schiffer, Brad, are you on?
I'm on.
Very good. Jeff Schnellman?
I'm here.
Then say hi.
Here.
And Commissioner Swope. Brian, are you on? Okay, well, we have 12 of 14 members, so that's a quorum. Let me just double check whether Ann Cope has joined or her alternate, and if not, whether Brian Swope has joined. Okay, so we have 12 of 14. We have a quorum. And since my screen's so tiny, I can't see, but I'm assuming Tom Campbell, Sabrina Evans, Jim Hammers, Mo Madani, and Justin Vogel for DBPR are on the call. Chairman Schock, do you want to review the agenda in the minutes?
Yeah, I can do that if you like, Jeff, to help you.
Sure, go ahead.
The meeting today, we will review and approve the meeting minutes and the agenda. And then we will review and accept the interim draft reports for three projects. And after that, we will review and discuss the research work plan for fiscal year 23-24. Then we'll have public comment, and then committee member comments and staff comments, and then we can adjourn. Jeff, back to you.
Okay, so if somebody would make a motion by name and a second by name, Chairman Schock will call the motion for approval of the agenda as they were posted.
Joe Belcher, move approval.
Ben Sayas, second.
Belcher and Sayas, to approve the agenda as mentioned. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Next, we'll review and approve the December 2nd 2022 meeting minutes. Is there a motion? And a second.
Belcher, move approval.
Schiffer, second.
Belcher, Schiffer. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 That motion is approved. Jeff, I'll turn it over to you to run through the introductions for the reports.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So our first report is assessment of inspection reporting and building conditions in South Florida for Miami-Dade and Broward Phase 2. It's Jennifer Bridge from University of Florida. Mo, is there anything you want to say on it before we turn over to Jennifer?
Just very quickly, you know, this is Mo Madani. Good afternoon. These inspection projects that we're reviewing this is what we maybe you approved last year. And this project is mainly a phase two of the assessment of inspection reporting of building condition in South Florida. The purpose of this phase two project, as you know, is to mainly enlarge the sample size of the inspection report that's being collected to do the analysis, and also another task was to really survey inspectors and get their feedback and perspective on the recently implemented Senate Bill 4D, which mainly required, which is the mandatory structural inspection for condos. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'm here, yeah. I'd like to share my screen if I may. So thank you, Mo, for that introduction. That actually gives a great overview of kind of what we're doing and why we're doing it. And so it's nice to be here with you again today to kind of give you an update on where we are with this phase two project. And again, I'm Jennifer Bridge from the University of Florida, and my co-investigators are Chris Ferraro and Tom Sudo. So just some background, Mo kind of already gave this to you a little bit, but we completed the phase one project in June of last year. We got almost 300 inspection reports for almost 300 buildings in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. These are for the 40-year building safety inspection programs. We cataloged the types and of reported structural damage and deficiencies. And in addition to providing information on the condition of the reported condition of the buildings, we also provided a broad account of just how the inspections are carried out, how the reporting practices and records are maintained. And then as a result of our work, we provided some recommendations. Right as we were finishing up this project, Senate Bill 4D was passed. And as you all are very well aware, this requires a two-phase approach to a milestone inspections for all Florida condominiums and co-ops. And the Florida Building Commission was required to provide kind of a response to that legislation at the end of last year. So with the phase one project in mind and the passage of Senate Bill 4D, we generated some objectives for this phase two. And as Mo said, we wanted to expand the size, the sample size of our inspection reports. But we also wanted to go back and evaluate, this is kind of something I'll talk about in some of the results, the previous inspection reports and looking forward to the new inspection reports, to try to determine in, you know, kind of through the lens of the new legislation, what percentage of buildings would require the phase two inspection according to the legislation as written. As Mo said, we also collected feedback from experienced inspectors on the legislation, and one of our other tasks is to work towards a database of inspection technologies. So just to kind of give you the bird's eye view of where we are, we've completed task one, which was the engineer feedback or the engineer architect feedback on the new legislation. And I reported on that to this committee, I believe in December. So I'll touch on it, but I won't go into that in a lot of detail. We are near completion of acquiring the additional building inspection reports that we need for this project. We're partway through data aggregation and analysis, and we haven't really started the last task except to kind of map out how we want to approach it. So I'll provide a little bit more detail on these in the next few slides. So again, task one inspector feedback, the objective was to obtain engineer or architect feedback on the milestone inspection requirements outlined in the legislation and provide that feedback kind of an aggregate summary form to the Florida Building Commission. We developed a set of questions and I conducted 15 phone interviews with experienced inspectors and aggregated and summarized the responses. And again, I've already provided a report that was approved on this task and the details of the responses. So I kind of have them summarized here, but I don't know that I necessarily need to go through them in detail because I have reported on them in the past. But just to kind of state that, you know, those that I interviewed generally had a positive opinions on the legislation. You know, they feel that it provides a good starting point as it's written, with the understanding that there will perhaps be opportunities for refinement as the program is implemented and additional data is collected. They had, you know, thoughts on the requirements. You know, there was some interest in not limiting it to condos and co-ops perhaps in the future. There was a lot of discussion about the demarcation line of 3 miles from the coast for identifying whether a building is considered coastal or inland. There was broad consensus, obviously, that coastal structures are going to see higher levels of deterioration. So, you know, certainly understanding that there needs to be some differentiation, but again, why 3 miles was something that was discussed at length. They found the age and initiation of inspection initiation in the interval acceptable. And again, I'll just kind of skip through this. I asked them about their thoughts on the two phases of the inspection, the substantial structural deterioration as the kind of trigger to go from a phase one to a phase two inspection, There were a lot of discussion about enforcement and strong requests to have consistent forms in all jurisdictions to ease the burden on the inspectors. And those that I spoke to felt that the inspection should be left to engineers, especially when it comes to the design of shoring and repair if needed. So on task two, we wanted to increase the sample size. We had about 261 buildings for which we received inspection reports in phase one, and we really felt that we wanted to expand that to have a more statistically significant sample size and identify additional addresses from which to make the records request for the report. So the first thing we did is we actually spent a lot of time determining the number of non-exempt addresses in the municipalities that we included in the study. This kind of gave us our denominator. Okay, you know, what's the starting value? And then if we, you know, strive to achieve, say, a 4 to 5% number in each municipality, then that kind of gave us something to shoot for adding additional inspection reports. And then again, you know, given the total non-exempt buildings in each municipality, you know, broken down by, you know, building ages, uses, number of stories, we wanted to ensure that our inspection reports achieved a representative mix of those building characteristics in our request. So our outcomes is we have now, and this differs slightly from what was in our report because obviously the project has marched on since we submitted our interim report. We now have made all of the requests that we think we plan to make for our phase two. You can see that middle row boxed in red. We've made a total of 301 additional inspection report requests. We've received over half of them to date. And just a note here, we really focused in on municipalities that were responsive the first time around. We didn't go back to municipalities that weren't particularly responsive. So we've had a great response rate, meaning if we asked for, you know, 40 reports, we're getting close to 40 reports. So we anticipate that we will get close to the number that we're requesting when it's all said and done. So as I said, this task is complete in the sense that we've asked for everything, but we just are waiting for the last of the reports to come in. The third task is really analyzing the data. And the nice thing is our phase one, we spent a lot of time in our phase one project establishing our approaches for extracting data from the inspection report so it can be standardized. We've, you know, established code to allow us to do kind of automated analysis of the extracted data. So the nice thing is we can leverage all of that work on the phase two reports that we're adding to our data set. But we did add an additional analysis that I alluded to earlier, and that is, you know, when we did our phase one project, we reported on the percentage of buildings that required repairs, and it was very binary. It was a yes or no. But it didn't do a great job of kind of quantifying the extent of the damage or the extent of the required repairs. And so, again, you know, looking at this now with kind of new perspective given the new legislation, we wanted to go back to the inspection reports from phase one and try to determine if we could identify the number of buildings or the percentage of buildings that would perhaps require a phase two milestone inspection according to the new legislation. So we went back and reanalyzed the reports according to a repair rating that we came up with that, again, allowed us to kind of standardize how we evaluated the extent of required repairs. So the repair rating that we came up with this year, we came up with there were five ratings according to this scheme. A rating of one is that no repairs were required. A rating of two is that some maintenance was suggested. A rating of three is that maintenance was required. So again, this might be repairs required, but they're really maintenance repairs. Four is signs of substantial structural deterioration. That's the language directly from the new legislation. And this would be like surface imperfections that are a sign of substantial structural deterioration, but maybe doesn't take you all the way to fully identified substantial structural deterioration. And then five, of course, is substantial structural deterioration. It's found and reported. Repairs were required. This is where you would see, you know, more significant section loss, significant spalling or cracking, immediate repairs and or shoring required. And so you can see some of the detailed descriptions here. We spent a lot of time kind of debating and, you know, really finding where the lines were with these repair ratings. Because, again, the inspection reports don't have this. The information is in there, but it's kind of buried in there and in different places. Or, you know, the previous inspection reports didn't necessarily require this exact demarcation that the new legislation does. So with this from the phase one, it's kind of confusing because we have a phase one and a phase two project, and then there's phase one and phase two inspections. So apologies if there's some confusion with that. But of the 215 inspection reports that we had from our phase one project, you can see the percentage that received each repair rating, 1 through 5. The reason this is 215 is at the time of our interim report, we hadn't quite gotten through all of the municipalities where we were missing Fort Lauderdale. We have since done that, but this is the data from the interim report. And so what we can see is that 76% of the buildings did not would have had a rating of 1 or 2, so would not have required a phase two inspection. 12% of the buildings would have received a rating of 4 or 5, and for us that would mean that there would be a phase two inspection required, signs of substantial structural deterioration. An additional 12% received a repair rating of 3, and you know that could go either way depending on the discretion of the engineer, the extent of the findings. And this is really something that came up in our discussions with the engineers in the first half is, you know, where does the line between kind of maintenance and structural, you know, repairs for maintenance and repairs to actually address structural deficiencies, you know, where's the line there? And again, there may be some judgment that may be different from engineer to engineer or inspector to inspector, I should say. And then our last task is the review of inspection technologies. We want to provide an objective assessment of both the destructive and non-destructive structural condition assessment technologies available. You know, so this is something that's important as, you know, we look at expansion of existing building inspections throughout the state. You know, there's a lot of interest in, you know, determining how we can improve our inspection practices and leverage technologies to perhaps streamline or improve the outcomes of the inspections. And so what we're seeking to do here is to identify current and emerging inspection and condition assessment technologies and identify some standard metrics that we can use to evaluate those technologies very consistently. And this will allow us to develop a comprehensive, what I'm calling a technology matrix, like a table, that allows us to kind of, again, objectively, consistently look at the different technologies available through standard metrics. So that inspectors and those involved in inspection, you know, kind of have an objective way to evaluate the effectiveness of these technologies. And so where we are with this task, and this, I'm not going to go through these, I just wanted to kind of put up here that we've, you know, through our kind of personal experience, through discussions with the inspectors through the interview process, our involvement on codes and standards committees, you know, we've kind of come up with this list of identified technologies. And again, some are, you know, been around for years and years and are very well established. Some are more emerging. And then on the right, you can see the evaluation metrics. So, you know, this is what we've identified as the way we want to evaluate each of the technologies on the left. So with that, that just kind of brings me to the end of the presentation. Again, we're continuing to do extraction from the new inspection reports and data analysis, and then we'll really ramp up on task 4 to complete that. And overall, we're on track for completion of the project as planned by June of 2023. And I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any questions, folks?
Yes, I have one.
Sure, go ahead, Mo.
Okay. Hey, Jennifer, with regard to the analysis, is there any way you can incorporate in the analysis type of occupancy? Meaning that, you know, based on the type of buildings that you have surveyed or looked at, can you characterize the data based on type of occupancy? For example, especially for those buildings that you have determined that they fall under phase two of the milestone inspection.
Yes, we absolutely can chop this up according to all of the data categories we have. So for example, I have a building use for every single one of these. So I can extract out the condos and co-ops and refine it, you know, provide that information according to the building use, absolutely. Yeah, okay. That's a great point.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, this has been Seas. I also had a question related to occupancy, because here in Miami-Dade County, all buildings with 10 occupants or more exceeding 2,000 square feet require what we used to call a 40-year recertification. So that might skew the numbers. And I would be interested to correlate also, if, based on the occupancy, if it's residential, condominium, or co-op, as opposed to the commercial, the warehouses, and industrial use buildings, who's doing better maintenance, if it's the commercial guys or the residential guys?
So in our phase one project, we did have it all broken down by building use, and we actually did observe that condos and co-ops had a slightly higher rate of required repairs than other building uses. It wasn't extreme, but it was a little higher. I don't have that in front of me right now, so I don't want to throw out any numbers. But basically, that'll absolutely be included in our analysis so that we can kind of, like you said, maybe pull out some of the different uses that may not be as applicable to some of the statewide concerns with the new legislation. But yeah, that's a great point, and we'll certainly include that analysis in our final report.
Jennifer, this is Sergio. Thank you for the report. In your phase one report, you compared the repairs between buildings that were in proximity to the coast and those of inland. Are you going to add these data points to that to see how that number changes now, knowing that the legislation is may select one period or the other, whether 25 or 30?
Yeah, we really want to revisit our assessment, because we did also in the phase one report break it down according to distance to the coast. But this was prior to our, you know, we had no knowledge of what the legislation was going to look like. And we chose, first of all, we chose the Coastal Construction Control Line as our definition of the coast, which is not probably the best choice, but we had to kind of go with something. So we may, first thing we may want to do is change our definition of the coast in our analysis. The second thing we may want to do is all of our breakdown, if I recall correctly, was 1,500 to 5,000 feet from the coast, greater than 5,000, 1,500 to 5,000 feet, and then less than 1,500. Well, we're not even touching 3 miles at that point. So we may want to kind of look at this data with the legislation in mind with the 3 miles. So, yeah, I definitely think, again, given the questions around the issue of distance to the coast, I definitely think we want to revisit this. I'm not exactly sure. You know, I don't have it all kind of sorted out right now. You know, there's some challenges associated, but, you know, this is a mapping problem, a GIS problem, and we don't necessarily have those expertise on our team. So, you know, there's going to be a limit to kind of how many different ways we can chop this up in terms of distance to the coast. But yes, we definitely need to address it given the new legislation.
Thank you.
Any other questions, committee members?
Jim Schock here. I'm just going to piggyback on what everybody said. In fact, he covered both of the questions I was going to have. Mo, with the occupancy, I know as a building official, I've seen a lot of problems with apartments, for example, more than I have seen with strip malls and things like that. So I think that's a good idea to look at the occupancies and even the sub-occupancy types, possibly. And then the time frame of the report, you know, there was we kind of heard in the first phase that there may not be much of a distinction. I think we can all agree that it's probably worse toward the coast, but at what point does it make it enough of a difference to have two different numbers? I think that's kind of an important concept to wrap around.
Okay.
Yeah, if I could respond to that, I know that there was some extraction of conclusions from our report that maybe indicated there wasn't a difference between coastal and inland structures, and we did not find that to be the case. I mean, I just think that, again, maybe we didn't have enough data. Maybe we were, again, looking at the binary repairs versus no repairs, and I'm really interested to see, you know, how that conclusion might have some refinement once we can break it down with this repair rating in a little bit more detail. I think it's really important for us to kind of dig into that further. So, yes, thank you for the comment on that.
Great. All right. Any other questions or comments before we move on to the next one? All right. Well, thanks, Jennifer. Very informative and good report.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next one is assessing the need to modernize water penetration resistance test procedures. It's also from the University of Florida, from principal investigator is Ryan Cattarelli. Mo, do you want to say anything on this one before Ryan takes off?
Yeah, very quickly, this project also one of those approved last year, and the purpose of this project is mainly to improved water penetration test, a procedure that currently used to test the products or for product approval with its windows, doors, etc. So that's the purpose of it. Thank you.
Right. And sorry, before we start, I apologize. We need to have a motion to accept the interim draft report, assessment of inspection reporting and building conditions in South Florida, as Jennifer just reported. Can we have such a motion by name and a second, please?
Vince, may I ask motion to approve the report as delivered?
Who made the second?
Melman.
All right. Commissioner Shock, can you go ahead and call the motion, sir?
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. All right, Ryan, Mo just introduced you. I'll turn it to you for your report.
All right. Can everyone hear me?
You can. Coming in loud and clear.
Okay, great. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for having me. My name is Ryan Cattarelli. I'm a research assistant scientist in the Department of Civil and Coastal Engineering and the Wind Engineering Technical Manager at the UF NERI Experimental Facility. Today I'll be presenting information from our interim report for the project titled Assessing the Need to Modernize Water Penetration Resistance Test Procedures. Let's see if I can advance the slides here. There we go. All right, so I'm gonna start with some a review of our background and motivation. So existing procedures for testing air and water leakage resistance of windows and doors apply enveloped and enveloped pressure and wetting conditions to conservatively simulate hurricane wind and wind-driven rain effects, so they don't fully simulate severe hurricane conditions. This would include winds typically increasing from tropical force winds to peak wind conditions over a few hours. So some of the standard test procedures include TAS 202, ASTM E331, which is a static test, where this is a figure from that ASTM standard, where you have a specimen installed in a pressure chamber. There's a blower attached to the pressure chamber. There's a control valve that throttles the air supply. And then there's a spray rack that applies wetting to the surface of the specimen. There's also ASTM E547, which is a cyclic test, and then some ASTM field tests. While they serve as a good first approximator for evaluating product performance, these procedures have not benefited from advances in scientific knowledge and technology that have occurred over the last several decades. So I want to go over some considerations for accurate hurricane wind and wind-driven rain simulation. One is turbulence in the upwind flow and flow distortion around the building. This causes significant spatiotemporal variation in pressure acting on the building surface. So only applying a steady worst-case load fails to simulate the lulls that promote drainage, which is a principal design consideration for product manufacturers. Cyclic pressure test procedures allow for lulls that promote drainage, but are not representative in all cases of real-world rates of pressure fluctuation. There's a major but easily addressable knowledge gap, which includes basically the 15 to 20% of design pressure for fenestration and water infiltration tests. The basis of current minimum wetting rate of 5 gallons per hour per square foot originates from trial and error testing to determine the threshold frequency or the threshold required to cause uniform sheeting of water on a curtain wall. It does not consider key factors such as climatology, approach wind speed, and location on the building. Finally, defining failure as a single drop passing into the building interior is not a representative measure of water damage, as the unmanaged accumulation of water over an entire hurricane episode is the principal driver of damage to walls, interiors, and building contents. So I'm going to go over our executive summary, which is in the document. So the UF team convened our advisory group to guide the research program. A test matrix was developed to study parameters that influence water penetration through generic slot opening. The model essentially enveloped penetrations. Initial staging and setup of the testing area was completed. Generic slot specimens and their fixtures were designed and fabricated. initial testing was completed and summary data presented in the report. And then two additional rounds of experimental testing are planned on real fenestration units with final input from the advisory group. So I'm going to skip ahead to section four, scope of work. Our scope of work, just to review, task one was the formation of an advisory group. Task two is our physical testing campaign. Task three is data analysis and interpretation. Task four is guidance on development of improved testing procedures. So our advisory group, we've formed an advisory group to guide the research program, and we drew from a list of representatives, including testing laboratories, homeowners and home builders, architectural firms, engineering firms, codes officials, home insurance industry, fenestration, building component, cladding manufacturers, with the goal of convening by video conference on a minimum of five occasions. This advisory group would provide input on research design, execution, interpretation of results, and the list of invitees that we put together is shown here. We had several individuals agree to participate. We had some decline, and then we had some no response. So this is our list. We tried to make it as representative as possible, but we obviously would always like to have more representation if that's available. So our next advisory group meeting we're targeting for late March or early April. And if the committee has any advice on improving or increasing the representation of the stream prior to the next meeting, we'd be happy to receive that input. So I'll go ahead and move on to our Task 2 physical testing campaign and talk a little bit about what the goal is here. So the objective of this task is to simulate hurricane-like wind pressure loading and wind-driven rain events from available data with input from the advisory group for application on selected building envelope systems. We'll apply a time varying load sequence using our high airflow pressure loading actuator, or HAPLA, which can test the water penetration resistance of a wide range of building systems. We'll apply water to the specimen surface using a rain rack system mounted inside the test chamber and calibrated to approximate field measurements of wind-driven rain intensities, and collect specimen measurements. Surface pressures will be measured using an absolute pressure transducer. Water infiltration will be measured using a high-resolution scale and water collection system. This enables us to detect quantities of water ranging from single droplets to gallons of flow per minute, and structural displacements using a set of laser displacement sensors targeted at points of interest on each specimen. So in addition to studying the performance of building components in real-world conditions, the testing campaign also includes standard baseline testing for comparison, such as E331, E547, or other, perhaps E2268. Our learning phase, which is our round one of testing, uses pressure sine sweeps to determine if there's an amplitude-dependent threshold frequency at which the applied pressure fluctuations no longer affect the flow through the building envelope, which is the focus of this meeting and the interim report. It's intended to inform the hurricane wind pressure and wind-driven rain simulations in later rounds of testing. So we're really looking to see if we're getting everything we need when we're simulating these hurricane traces. So what frequency content do we need to include? What wetting rates should we consider? So we developed a parametric study that explores the system dynamics of building envelope systems that do not have compression seals. This would be sliding windows and doors. And then we apply extreme wetting rates to determine if the maximum upper bound for wetting exists for conventional building systems, above which water infiltration is no longer effective. So that's the focus of the interim report. Okay, so task three is data analysis and interpretation. So the objective of this task is to analyze the data collected during the physical testing campaign and proceed with data interpretation in a format that can be utilized by the commission and industry. So we analyzed the data from the pressure sine sweep test, which I'll show you some of that today. We'll look at the pressure frequency content, the wetting rates, generic specimen geometry. We'll look at extreme wetting rates. We have some of that as well. And then the hurricane passage simulation test. That's really the main focus of the next round of testing. These will be conducted to assess the extent of unmanaged water accumulation via ingress over an entire episode. We'll talk a little bit more about that. This will be performed to help determine the amount of water damage to be expected for products that may currently pass the standard test procedures. And we'll make comparisons to the standard static and cyclic pressure and wetting tests. Then task four is guidance on development of improved testing procedures. So we'll be developing guidance regarding the implementation of improved standard test procedures based on the results from task three. And we'll develop a method to correlate existing test procedures to new methods of testing based on the results from this research. Okay, so I'm going to go to section 7 and talk about our experimental equipment. So this is from figure 1. Our experimental equipment includes the high airflow pressure loading actuator, which is shown here, or HAPLA. This is at the Powell Family Structures and Materials Laboratory at UF. So time-varying load sequences are applied to window and door specimens using the closed-loop control system of the HAPLA, and it receives feedback from an absolute pressure transducer located within the test chamber. The control system that the system uses it actuates a high-performance bidirectional valve to produce rapid pressure changes. So you can see that here in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. The face of the pressure chamber accepts essentially an 8-foot by 8-foot wall unit with integrated window or door, and the exterior of the unit faces into the chamber. So we're kind of spraying water on the outside of the specimen. Timber frame wall units have rough openings capable of accepting specimens with pre-installed bucks. The water is applied to the system's specimen surfaces using a calibrated rain rack system mounted inside the test chamber. And structural displacements are measured using laser displacement sensors targeted at points of interest on specimen if that's required for the test. And water infiltration is measured using high-resolution scale and water collection system to detect quantities of water ranging from single droplets to gallons of flow per minute. And that's located right here. Okay, so this is our wall framing detail. It is built according to the Florida Building Code 6th edition for 175 mile an hour wind speed. It was we got this designed so that we could as accurately as possible with the size of the chamber we have get structural displacements to account for some of those effects that you'd see in the field. And this is where we put our specimens for window specimens. So I'm going to go to section 8, and we'll talk about specimen and test matrix. So this is our round 1 learning phase. Round 1 is a parametric sensitivity study. So let's talk a little bit about the parameters that we were interested in varying. The learning phase is really intended to be as generic as possible, and the experimental setup is intended to apply to operable windows, doors, and many other linear penetrations in a building envelope. The window in the figure is just used as an example. And so the parameters for consideration include things like vertical gaps, the width and height of those gaps, horizontal gaps, the width and height of those, the risers, with or without. So that's H sub R. And applied pressure fluctuations, which we use sine sweeps in this phase. And we looked at our frequency range, minimum frequency, maximum frequency, and what made sense based on full-scale hurricane data, and also amplitude ranges based on what we've seen from full-scale data. And then wetting rate, wind-driven rain. So this is our wall framing detail here. And in that opening, we came up with this concept here, which is a vertical opening and a horizontal opening, where you place an aluminum plate here or an aluminum plate here, put a slot in that plate, and then measure the flow through it. And so this is the CAD model of the final design. This is where round 1A takes place, which is the focus of the interim report right here. This is where round 1B will be located. This is the width of the slot. This is the height of the slot, which varies. This is the height of the riser, which is another parameter we varied. This is an example of a sine sweep going a little above 60 PSF at a peak. And this is the sine sweep being applied system. We have wind-driven rain, our wetting applied to the system. We're measuring our pressure out and our flow out of the system. And this is an isometric view of the trough. I wanted to give you a bit better view of the trough. So if we look at a section out of that trough, you can see this is what it looks like. So this is the pressure chamber side on the left. This is the laboratory on the right. So this is just the ambient laboratory environment. There's our slot opening. This is the trough here. Here's our riser. The flow goes through, driven by the pressure gradient through the system and into our collection system. And then when the pressure drops, it's allowed to drain back to the system. So this is our, this is table one from the report for round one configurations and experimental parameters. So here are the relevant variables that we incremented through. So round 1A, we have three horizontal openings shown here. They varied slot height. That was evaluated under various pressure, wetting, and riser conditions. Each test was 10 minutes in duration. We slept through five frequencies shown here of pressure from low to high for 2 minutes at each frequency. We had three pressure amplitudes tested, and three wetting rates were tested at each pressure amplitude. And each specimen was tested for four riser conditions for a total of 36 tests per specimen and a total of 108 tests for approximately 20 hours of testing, not including reconfiguration time. So I'm going to go into section 9, which is our results and discussion. And that is part of task 3. So this is initial analysis of the data. So this is figure 3, which shows an eighth-inch slot opening with a half-inch riser. This this frequency fluctuation is it's the 2 minutes that it was running at 0.2 hertz with a with an amplitude of 10.22 or 5.22 PSF and a wind-driven rain value of 7.5 gallons per hour per square foot. So these are the relevant parameters here. The legend at the top right corner of this plot shows the target pressure in black and the measured pressure in red. This shows the scale measurement in the second subplot, and the bottom subplot shows the measured instantaneous flow rate and then the average flow rate. If you look at this pressure fluctuation here, you can see that there is a phase delay between the pressure fluctuation and the water ingress. So the flow rate increases. There's a phase delay between that, and you'll see in a second that's a result of the kind of the geometry of the system, the fact that the scale is downstream of the water flowing through the specimen. I'm going to show you a video of a slightly, it's a similar test, but it is a different test. So this is the slot opening of a 16th inch with a 2-inch riser and the fluctuation amplitude of 15.67 PSF. The frequency is the same, so 0.2 hertz, and a wetting value of 5 gallons per hour per square foot. This is the value for in the pressure chamber, so the target pressure and the measured pressure, the water on the scale in the middle plot, and the flow rate on the bottom plot. So I'll go ahead and play this, and you can see the pressure fluctuations occurring. Look on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see the water pumping through when the pressure rises and just flowing right over the riser and flowing through into the collection system. You can see over time, you can see the phase delay between the rising pressure and the increase in wetting through the drain there. And so at each frequency, we do this for 2 minutes to get a good representative average of the flow rate. So you see here the rain flows through, goes into the trough, goes onto the scale. So we're coming up on a section where we have a high resolution scale, but it can only handle about 5 pounds of water. So we'd have to switch the bucket out periodically. And so we have an operator sitting there waiting for the bucket to fill. he pushes the bucket out. We go through a process. We basically take the time derivative of the measurement of the scale, get it up and take the reintegrate that, and we get back to the original signal. We kind of clean up that bucket move there. So you see that this just happens occurs for each frequency and for each configuration. That is. All right, so that's the 2-minute test. So now I'll go through some summary results. So this is figure 4 from the report. I'll go through the different parts of this figure because there's a lot going on here. So there's the figure number. We have our 16th inch slot height, and we have on the legend shows the wetting rates. So we have the 3 wetting rates: 2.5 gallons per hour per square foot, 5 and 7.5. Then on the left hand side, the vertical axis is the mean flow rates. The peak pressures are these columns. So the pressures are rising, and then the riser heights are increasing here. And so if you look, you can kind of see we have some trends forming for depending on the peak pressure that we're applying. But for this particular slot configuration, you do start to see some increases in flow as the frequency increases, which is kind of interesting. This is the second half of this plot. The plot is portrait in the document. So you have an increase of the 2-inch riser and the 4-inch riser here. And you can see that if you look at this particular data point, this is that video I just showed you. That's the mean flow rate right there that I just showed you from that plot. So you can see that in this case, the effect is pretty flat. There isn't like a strong dependence on frequency. What we're really looking at is the frequency dependence here. So how dependent is a particular configuration on the frequency of the fluctuation that we're seeing? So depending on the configuration, we'll go to the 8th inch slot opening. Depending on the configuration, you see fairly large differences in dependence. And in this particular configuration, you see this kind of dip at 0.8 hertz, and then it goes back up. So we don't think we've hit a maximum frequency. In this particular case, the same occurs here for the 2-inch riser height, and to a lesser extent, the 4-inch riser height. So I'll go to figure 6, which is the 1/4-inch slot opening. This is a very big opening. We're just trying to get a representative range of potential openings. And so you can see here that this fairly interesting trend, it turns out to be a fairly complex relationship. Between these different parameters. And once again, we do kind of start to see this dip in the, you know, around 0.8, a little bit lower in this case, of flow through the system. So I'll just go through briefly a little bit of our discussion about this. There's still more to learn, obviously. Results from around 1A indicate that a threshold wetting rate has not been reached, since all the tests for which there is significant water ingress show increases in ingress as wetting increases even beyond 5 gallons per hour per square foot. The results also indicate that a threshold maximum frequency has not yet been reached, and in some cases water ingress begins to increase at the maximum applied frequency. This indicates that frequencies higher than 1 hertz may need to be included in the hurricane wind pressure simulation traces. So if you look at our 16th inch slot opening, the general trend was for the slot opening was for the water ingress to increase as frequency increases, which is a counterintuitive result since the overall system hydraulic and pneumatic impedance should actually increase as the frequency increases. So we should be getting less through. So for the 8th inch slot opening, in general, as the riser height increases, the flow through the system decreases as expected, and flow rate through the system increases as peak pressure increases. Both of those are expected results. Water ingress reaches the minimum at 0.8 before increasing again in some cases. And then for the 1/4-inch slot opening, the riser appears to be an effective strategy for preventing water ingress for all the slot openings. That's kind of a general finding. So One clear trend is the effectiveness of risers in reducing the average flow rate, regardless of the other test parameters. Also, riser effectiveness reduces as pressure increases, counteracting the back pressure created by the riser. So some preliminary results. Our next steps, based on what we is for some additional testing for round 1A based on observed trends. And this will include some higher frequency fluctuations for a select set of configurations where we think it might be interesting. Some higher wetting rates for a select set of configurations for the same reason, to see if we actually do kind of start to plateau at some point. Because in some cases we really do kind of, it doesn't seem to be very, the wetting rate doesn't really make much of a difference. So we need to see kind of where this threshold occurs for the other specimens. And we intend to reduce the test matrix for round 1B, the vertical opening, to account for that, round 1A. So I'll try to briefly talk about our remaining tasks, including our development of a wind pressure simulation. So we've made progress on this front. And I want to just briefly go through what we're intending to do. So to expand on task 2 with real-world loading conditions, we'll complete the development of methodologies built on prior work to simulate hurricane-like wind pressure loading events for application on building envelope systems and upcoming rounds of testing. The fluctuating applied pressure sequences will be synthesized from available data as follows. So wind speed records will be derived empirically from historical hurricane track intensity records from intense hurricanes representative of a design level event. I'm going to show you an example. This is from a Siri project report by Forrest Masters. This is one of the figures from that report for peak gust values for historical hurricane. And so if we look at these hurricanes here, you can see that these very short durations, so this is occurring over 3 hours, you have this very intense increase in wind speed, gust 3 second peak velocities. And so that is what we're modeling, that this envelope here. That's what we intend to do, something like that, like an updated version potentially. And then after we have that, we'll take fluctuating surface pressure coefficient records extracted from boundary layer wind tunnel modeling of low-rise buildings. Many wind directions will be considered to determine a representative worst-case mean pressure time history tap location for a worst-case marine or open exposure. And so this is an example of one of those building models. This comes from the NIST Aerodynamic Database. Essentially, you can see you got this model, you have this approach flow, you have these pressure taps, we get these fluctuating pressures. We can take those fluctuating pressures, and then we can take the model scale pressure coefficients from them, and we can convert them to full-scale dynamic pressure. We can use that hurricane time history, the increase over time of that hurricane time history, and generate something like this, which is a synthesized full-scale, full-duration hurricane time history. This would be the pressure fluctuating on the specimen. And so this shows a comparison to ASTM E331 for a high-performing unit. This is our round one sine sweep, pressure number one. This is our round one sine sweep, peak pressure number two. And our round one sine sweep peak pressure number three. So we're trying to get the full range, and these sine sweep tests are pretty close to the full range and get a good idea of what's going to happen when we subject these real systems to this type of loading. And finally, we'll use velocity dependent wetting rates derived from available sources such as climatological studies. Okay, so our upcoming experiment will include two rounds of experimental testing with final input from the advisory group to be provided during the next advisory group teleconference. So key aspects of hurricane-like wind pressure loading simulation for application on building envelope systems will be discussed with the knowledge gained during round one. This will inform decisions regarding maximum wetting rates and applied cutoff frequencies. So round two will investigate window systems, the total of up to 5 non-ceiling operable window systems or sliding window systems will be selected to be representative of available products within the market. Final number of window specimens tested will be dependent on time and availability of laboratory staff. Baseline testing will include the ASTM standard tests that we discussed, earlier, and sign sweep tests. So we'll run the same sign sweep tests that we just discussed and see how similar or how different they are. Full hurricane passage simulations will be performed. And then the same will be true for the door systems. We'll do up to three non-sealing door systems. They'll be selected based on, we'll try to be select them based on representative and available products within the market. And the final number of door specimens tests will be dependent on time and availability of laboratory staff. And so we'll run the same ASTM standard tests and sign sweeps as we will on the windows. Okay, and so after we have all of these data, we'll analyze and present the findings to the advisory group for interpretation. The data will be presented in a format that can be utilized by the FBC and industry. And from the resulting analysis, guidance will be developed regarding the implementation of improved standard test procedures and a method to correlate the existing test procedures to new methods of testing based on the results from the research will also be developed. All right, thank you for your time. I realize that was a little longer than the last one, so apologies. But if you have any questions, please feel free.
All right, does anybody have any questions on what Ryan just presented?
Hey, Jeff, this is Mark. Mark, question.
Sure, Mark. Yeah, Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Hi, Ryan. Thanks for the report. Really interesting work. Couple questions. You could maybe go back to slide, it might have been 23 or 24. You kind of showed a cross-sectional of how the riser height with the inflow of the slot heights. This one right here. This would be a good one, whether or not we need it in the interim report. I think you want to have this in the final report that better explains the correlation of the slot height and the riser heights.
Yeah.
Just a question in terms of the slot heights and the riser heights that you chose. What was the rationale for the different dimensions that you used for those? Was the riser height intended to reflect what would be kind of a sill stop height at the bottom of the window? Is that what that was intended to represent?
Yeah. So we tried to make it as generic as possible, but you can imagine if you have a feature like this in a product, this may be the effect. And so what we're really trying to do is just strip it down as much as possible and make it as generic as possible. But yeah, so it's really like, can the specimen, whatever it is, can it stage water up in it? And then when the pressure lets off, can it drain? And so this may be an extreme example, but you can imagine taking it like, okay, well, imagine this is a slot width of, in this case, 48 inches. If you make it half that much, you may be able to just scale the flow through by half as well. So that's really the intent of the study, and we know that we had a limited number of tests that we could run, so we were trying to get the biggest range of tests, like really map out the parameter space as much as we could. But that's really the intent. Can the system stage water? Can it drain? You can see that if you have those two features, you really get this reduction in flow through the system.
Great, thank you. A couple of follow-ups on the when you're looking at the charts that you did and you saw some dips down there, can you explain what you believe is happening there? Like I'm looking at figure 5 in the report, in the interim report, particularly at 0.8, there were some dips across several charts there.
Yeah, so you're talking about these slides. Can you see my screen?
So. Yep, I can see it. Yeah, the dips, particularly at 0.8, I think you made a comment. I don't know that I fully caught what you thought was happening there.
yes, I actually don't. I don't know exactly what is happening. Okay. I would say that this is an observation at this point.
Okay.
I will look into what may be causing it. The effect may. Maybe explained by something like the Helmholtz frequency of the system. I'm not really sure. That would just be speculation at this point.
Okay, something that you'll try to look at and try to understand in the next phase.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't had a lot of time to really dig into why we see each particular effect. You know, this is our exploration, kind of our learning phase. But yeah, it's a very interesting finding that we see across many different tests. It doesn't seem, you know, even the slot heights you can see, even with the larger slot heights, we tend to see that again.
And maybe you commented on this, and if you did and I missed it, I'm sorry, but in terms of the water rates and how you're replicating the wind-driven, is it based on some of the UF weathering data that you've done through a lot of hurricanes? Is that how you're basing that?
Yeah, I didn't include the detailed calculations on the wetting rates in this particular presentation just for sake of time. So I'm
got
already
it.
Like very,
right.
very
yeah,
long.
Okay.
Yeah.
But maybe worth making a note before the final report.
Absolutely. I plan on going into some detail about exactly how we set up the simulation. It's just, we weren't doing that simulation in the interim report, so I was kind of trying to give a preview of what's gonna be happening in the next stage.
And could you provide an example of what you mean by a non-ceiling operable window or door?
Yeah, absolutely. So, a sliding unit, something that you can't generate a strong compression seal with. So maybe there's a better terminology that the committee prefers there. But just something that you can't put a bulk seal on.
Okay,
and
got it.
You get a good strong compression seal. Because those units, from what we've seen in the past, tend to behave quite a bit differently.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for the question.
All right. Committee members, are there any other questions?
Vince, here I've got only one. Related more than anything to something we observed here with the negative pressure inside the actual units. And you alluded to it slightly, where different positions on the actual building with the wind can create fluctuations in the pressure. We've observed, and there was a video once of an actual sliding glass door acting where the external air and the internal air, the difference in the pressure, it looked like a water fountain coming right over one of those curves on the sliding glass door. So I was wondering if there's some kind of dynamic test being thought of or designed for different wind pressures. I mean, IBHS has their wall of wind, and FIU has one. But it would be interesting to know the various exposures, that negative pressure on the inside, what effects it's having as far as the testing, if there's any structural or moldings or gasketing that might assist in limiting how much water is coming in.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So we talk about like net pressures really when it comes to these different types. Because say you have effects. We didn't account for that in this particular round of tests because we're doing some generic stuff. But when we're talking about simulating a hurricane passage, then we need to account for the internal pressurization or the net pressure in the system. It depends on where, like you said, it depends on where you're at on the building, whether you're on the windward face or the leeward face. You'll have different pressures acting on it. I think that one of the big drivers, and this is something that we can test, we intend to select a few different locations from one of these models. We're going to look at a bunch of worst case. If you look at these pressure taps on this building model, for instance, you can look at these building taps for all these different wind angles. So they rotate the model in the wind tunnel, and they get, you know, you get quartering wind and things like that. So you get all these really interesting flow patterns. And we basically just loop through all of those different tests and see what the worst cases are for, like, mean pressure fluctuations and things like that. You can look at different statistics that you really want to test. But we intend to select a few and then test a specimen with you know, several different traces and see what happens. Because we want to get a range of responses. You know, like you said, does it look like a water fountain in this particular pressure fluctuation? Negative pressures are an interesting idea. We typically think about using like our stagnation pressure. So when the wind is basically perpendicular to the face, you get this really strong stagnation pressure. But it really does depend on where you're at on the surface of the structure. structure because you have the, and, you know, in full scale, wind-driven rain, the flow is, the water droplets are moving around the building, and so the different drop sizes kind of get filtered with that, through that process. You get different rain drop size distributions occurring due to that. So there's a bunch of little factors that I didn't have time to go through in this particular presentation that will be part of the final report.
For sure. Okay. All right. Is there any other questions before I ask for a motion to accept the interim report?
Jeff, I have a number of questions. Sorry.
A number?
Go ahead. Who is this report targeted at? Who's the target audience for the report?
Okay, so the target audience of the report is the Florida Building Commission. do you mean who is the research intended to help?
Yes.
Okay. So what we're really looking at is we're looking at whether or not these standard ASTM tests, the ones that are typically done on top, you know, windows and doors, whether or not they represent a test that is representative of, well, whether or not the test will accurately produce a result that is similar to what you'd see in a strong hurricane. So if you test a product and it passes the ASTM test and then you put it in the field, will it perform well in a severe hurricane? Let's just say, for the sake of argument, since we look at this plot and we see that Hurricane Andrew is really controlling in this case, if we put this product in Hurricane Andrew's way, would we have a dry house afterwards? That's really what it's for. So we're investigating that now. So the goal is really to benefit the industry as a whole. You know, get a test that really start to work towards getting tests that really start to represent these fluctuating pressure conditions, which do behave differently than the static conditions.
Okay. Thank you. The next question, and this may be my ignorance, but when I read through this report, not remembering all the discussion we had, I never saw that we were testing windows. It says water flow through the building envelope. So I'm looking through this, and I see your mock-up that has an open frame wall with a window in there, and my recollection was in our discussions that we had all manner of conversation about you can't just blame it on the window. You have to look at the installation. You have to look at the rest of the envelope. And my question on this is what you're evaluating simply the window performance?
So in this particular case, we're trying to ensure, and this is, you know, we're in the process of discussing exactly the extent of the testing with the advisory group. So I don't have an answer for you quite yet. I don't want to really jump the gun on discussions with the advisory group because they may have opinion, they may have suggestions which are different than what I'm going to say now. So the main intent is to look at window units that do not have defects to see if there is a problem, let's say windows and doors, to see if there is a problem. But the building envelope in general, we can absolutely look at. This particular generic test would start to get at if you do have gaps in your building envelope, what might happen. But just in terms of the scope and scale of the project, we're looking at, you know, what features of the building envelope, the big openings in the building envelope, cause the most issues in terms of water ingress.
Okay, and does the test that you just showed us do that?
So this, like I said, this is a generic test that tests generic slot opening. So you can think of it as like very, very basic in comparison to a full product test. If that makes sense. So if you have a gap and we could, you know, you could conceive of making the gaps much smaller, you know, make circular gaps and take a look at the dynamics through that system. But those tests get much more complicated. So we're trying to make something that's something we can measure. You know, the flow rates are high enough that we can measure what's going on and seeing what frequencies are active, which ones are not as active, which gets kind of complicated, which is why you see all the different behavior and the different frequencies.
Okay. And, you know, just part of the reason I'm asking this question is the extensive discussion and debate that we had a year or so ago when this was brought up. And then the other thing is, I think you mentioned that your wall mock-up was designed for the 6th edition of the Florida Building Code. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that is correct.
Because we're now operating under the 7th edition, and shortly it'll be the 8th.
Right.
I don't know that there's a substantial difference in that wall design, and I suspect there is not, but we ought to be doing it at least for the current code, I would think.
Yeah, I can look at that and see if there's any modifications to that wall unit that we need to make.
And when you do that, it was not obvious to me, but it looked to me like you had one header stud in there, and I believe for that wall size, you'd need two on each side, which if you're only addressing the window, probably doesn't matter, but if you're doing the entire envelope, that certainly could matter.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take a look and see what deviations that this particular wall unit makes relative to the current version of the building code.
Okay, and then last question, again, to display my ignorance. Can you explain to me what the difference in the slot opening widths is?
Okay, so we initially thought about varying the slot opening width, but we actually just decided to go with the full width and then adjust the other parameters for the sake of time. So the width is a full 48 inches, and we just varied the height.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the questions.
All right. Is there any other questions?
Yes, this is Steve John. If I can ask Ryan a question real quick.
Well, one second, Steve. Unfortunately, I'm only dealing right now with the committee. And we do have, you know, another report and then another major topic on the agenda, so we kind of have to be cognizant of that. Are there any other committee members that have any questions on the report? Okay.
Yes, actually, I did. This is John Blossom. I'm still trying to in my mind, is this a baseline, I guess, is what you're trying to figure out with all the water that's getting through? But typically, you know, windows and doors that are manufactured and are installed in structures are not going to have the kind of spacing that you have here. So is this just simply a baseline, and then you're going to compare it later on to future testing? But I'm trying to wrap my mind around why these spaces are so large, when that's typically not going to be happening for windows that are installed and doors that are installed for structures that meet the Florida Building Code.
Right. No, that's a good point. It is to serve as a baseline, and it's to serve. I mean, the main goal, and I tried to convey this as well as I can. There's just the amount of time I have makes it kind of difficult to go into the turbulent fluctuations in a hurricane, for instance. So what we're really looking at is, you know, through geometric features like this, what frequencies are really active, and what do we need to simulate in our hurricane time history? You know, what frequency do we need to simulate up to? Is 1 hertz sufficient, or do we need to go higher? And it seems that, at least in these types of openings, even with the small slot openings, while it may be generic and may not apply to an exact, like the exact product you may be thinking of, or you may be able to test in the system, it's at least a good baseline for looking at how we tune our next phase of testing, if that makes sense.
Okay. Any other committee member have any comments or questions? Ryan, you have an advisory committee. I know that was a contingent part of the project. Is that an opportunity for folks to get into some deeper detail in terms of some of the requirements? And
Yeah, absolutely. If you have any guidance on who I might include in the committee, that was also part of the presentation, just to throw the invitation out there, because we didn't get as much involvement as we had hoped. So yeah, absolutely, it'd be great to talk about some more of these details.
So Steve Strong, that might be a good